come. Lie close and I will tell you a story. We will keep each other warm. All right? Rachel lay on her side, her back against Kalin, who curled all around her and put her arm over her. It felt nice, but she knew it was a trick. Kalin's face was close to her ear, and as she lay there, Kalin told her a story about a fisherman who turned into a fish. The words made pictures in her head, and for a while she forgot about her troubles. Once, she and Kalin even laughed together. When she was finished with the story, Kalin kissed the top of her head and then stroked the side of her forehead. She pretended Kalin wasn't really mean. It couldn't hurt to pretend. Nothing had ever felt as good as those fingers on her and the little song Kalin sang in her ear. Rachel thought this must be what it felt like to have a mother. Against her will, she fell asleep and had wonderful dreams. She came awake in the middle of the night when Richard woke Kalin, but she pretended she was still asleep. "You want to keep sleeping with her?" he whispered real soft. Rachel held her breath. "No," Kalin whispered back. "I'll take my watch." Rachel could hear her putting on her cloak and going outside. She listened to which way Kalin's feet went. After he put some more wood in the fire, Richard lay down, close. She could see the inside of the wayward pine brighten. She knew Richard was watching her. She could feel his eyes on her back. She wanted so much to tell him how mean Kalin really was and ask him to run away with her. He was such a nice man, and his hugs were the bestest things in the whole world. He reached over and pulled the blanket up around her tighter, tucking it under her chin. Tears ran down her cheeks. She could hear him lie on his back and pull his blanket up. Rachel waited until she heard his even breathing, and she knew he was asleep before she slipped out from under the blanket. Chapter 36. Kalin turned expectantly when he batted a limb out of the way as he pushed into the wayward pine and flopped down in front of the fire. He pulled his pack across the ground and started jamming things in it. "Well?" Richard shot her an angry glare. "I found her tracks, going west, back the way we came. They joined the trail a few hundred yards out. They're hours old." He pointed to the ground at the back of the wayward pine. "That's where she went out. She circled around you through the woods, well clear of us. I've tracked men who didn't want to be found, and their trails were easier to follow. She walks on top of things, roots, rocks, and she's too little to make a print where another would. Did you see her arms?"
"I saw long bruises. They are from a switch."
"No, I mean scratches."
"I saw no scratches."
"Exactly. Her dress had burrs on it. She's been through the bramble, yet she had no scratches on her arms. She's tender, so she avoids brushing up against anything. An adult would just push past, leave a trail of disturbed or broken branches. She almost never touches anything. You should see the trail I left, going through the bushes trying to track her. A blind man could follow it. She moves through the underbrush like air. Even when she was back on the trail, I couldn't tell for a while. Her feet are bare. She doesn't like stepping in water or mud. It makes her feet colder, so she steps where it's dry, where you can't see her passing."
"I should have seen her leaving."
He realized Kalin thought he was blaming her. He let out an exasperated breath. "It's not your fault, Kalin. If I had been standing watch, I wouldn't have seen her go either. She didn't want to be seen. She's one smart little girl."
It didn't seem to make her feel any better.
"But you can track her, right?" He gave her a sidelong glance. "I can." He reached to his breast. "I found this in my shirt pocket." He lifted an eyebrow. "By my heart." He pulled out the lock of Rachel's hair, tied with the vine. He twisted it in his fingers. "To remember her by." Kalin's face was ashen as she rose.
"This is my fault."
She pushed out of the wayward pine. He tried to grab her arm, but she tore away from him. Richard set his pack aside and followed. Kalin stood off a ways, her arms folded below her breasts, her back to him. She stared off into the woods.
"Kalin, it isn't your fault."
She nodded.
It was my hair. Didn't you see the fear in her eyes when she looked at my hair? I have seen that look 1,000 times. Do you have any idea what it's like to frighten people, even children, all the time? He didn't answer. Richard, cut my hair for me. What? She turned to him, pleading in her eyes. Cut it off for me? He watched the hurt in her eyes. Why haven't you just cut it yourself? She turned away. I cannot. The magic will not allow a confessor to cut her own hair. If we try, it brings pain so great it prevents us from doing so. How could that be? Remember the pain you suffered from the magic of the sword when you killed a man the first time? It is the same pain. It will render a confessor unconscious before the task can be accomplished. I tried only once. Every confessor tries once, but only once. Our hair must be cut by another when it needs trimming, but none would dare to cut it all off. She turned to him once more. Will you do it for me? Will you cut my hair? He looked away from her eyes to the brightening slate-blue sky, trying to understand what it was he was feeling, what it was she must be feeling. There was so much he didn't know about her still. Her life, her world, was a mystery to him. There had been a time when he wanted to know it all. Now he knew he never could. The gulf between them was filled with magic. Magic designed, it seemed, explicitly to keep them apart. His eyes returned to her. No. May I know why? Because I respect you for who you are. The Kaylin I know wouldn't want to fool people by trying to make them think she is less than she is. Even if you did fool some, it would change nothing. You are who you are, the Mother Confessor. We all can be no more or less than who we are. He smiled. A wise woman, a friend of mine, told me that once. Any man would leap for the chance to cut a confessor's hair. Not this one. This one is your friend. She gave a nod, her arms still folded against her stomach. She must be cold. She didn't even take a blanket. She didn't take any food either, other than that loaf of bread she's saving for some reason, and she was starving. Kaylin smiled at last. She ate more than you and me together. At least her belly is full. Richard, when she gets to Horner's Mill... She isn't going to Horner's Mill. Kaylin came closer. But that's where her grandmother is. Richard shook his head. She doesn't have a grandmother. When she said her grandmother was in Horner's Mill, and I told her she couldn't go there, she didn't even falter. She simply said she would go somewhere else. She never gave it a thought, never asked about her grandmother or even raised an objection. She's running from something. Running? Maybe from whoever put those bruises on her arms. And on her back. Whenever my hand touched one, she flinched, but she didn't say anything. She wanted to be hugged that badly. Kaylin's brow wrinkled with sorrow. I'd say she was running from whoever cut her hair like that. Her hair? He nodded again. It was meant to mark her, maybe as property. No one would cut someone's hair like that except to give a message. Especially in the Midlands, where everyone pays so much attention to hair. It was deliberate, a message of power over her. That's why I cut it for her, to remove the mark. Kaylin stared at nothing in particular. That was why she was so happy to have it cut even, she whispered. There is more to it, though, than simply running away. She lies easier than a gambler. She lies with the ease of someone who has a powerful need. Her eyes came to his again. Like what? I don't know, he sighed. But it has something to do with that loaf of bread. The bread? Do you really think so? She had no shoes, no cloak, nothing but her doll. It's her most precious possession. She's devoted to it, yet she let us touch it. But she wouldn't let us get within an arm's length of that loaf of bread. I don't know much about the magic in the Midlands, but where I come from, A little girl will not value a loaf of bread more than her doll, and I don't think it's any different here. Did you see the look in her eyes when you reached for the bread and she snatched it away? If she had had a knife and you hadn't backed off, she would have used it on you.
Richard, she admonished, you can't really believe that about a little girl? A loaf of bread couldn't be that important to her.
No. You said yourself she ate as much as both of us put together. I was beginning to think she was related to Zed. Explain why, if she was half-starved, she hadn't even nibbled on that loaf of bread.
He shook his head. There is something going on, and that loaf of bread is at the center of it.
Kaelin took a step toward him.
So we're going after her?
Richard felt the weight of the tooth against his chest. He took a deep breath, letting it out slowly.
No. As Zed is fond of saying, nothing is ever easy.
How can we justify going after one little girl to solve the riddle of her loaf of bread while Rahl goes after the box?
She took his hand in one of hers, looked down at it.
I hate what Tarkin Rahl does to us, the way he twists us.
She squeezed his hand.
She got into our hearts awfully quick.
Richard gave her a one-armed hug.
That she did. She's one special little girl. I hope she finds what she's after, and that she's safe.
He let go of Kaelin and started for the Wayward Pine to get their things.
Let's get moving.
Neither wanted to think about how they felt, that they were deserting Rachel, condemning her to the embrace of dangers she knew nothing about and was defenseless against, and so both set their minds to covering as much ground as fast as they could. The bright day wore on with an endless expanse of rugged forest, and with their exertion they didn't notice the cold. Richard was always glad when he saw a spider web stretched across the trail. He had begun to think of spiders as his guardians. When he had been a guide, he had always been annoyed to have them tickle his face.
Thank you, Sister Spider, he said to himself every time he passed one now.
Near midday, they stopped for a break on sunlit rocks in an icy stream. Richard splashed the frigid water on his face, trying to work up some energy. He was tired already. Lunch was cold, too, and lasted only as long as it took to bolt it down. They both stuffed the last bites in their mouths, brushed their hands off on their pants, and hopped down off the flat pink rock. As much as he tried not to think about Rachel, he found himself frowning with worry before he realized he was doing it again. He saw Kaelin's brow wrinkle sometimes when she turned, checking to the sides. One time he asked if she thought he had made the right decision. She didn't have to ask which decision he was talking about. She asked how long he thought it would have taken to catch her. He thought 2 days if everything went right, at least one to catch her and another back. 2 days, she had told him, was more than they could afford. It felt reassuring to hear her say it. Late in the afternoon, the sun slipped behind a distant peak of one of the mountains of the Rang Shada, muting and softening the colors of the woods, calming the wind, and settling a stillness over the countryside. Richard was able to set aside his thoughts of Rachel as he concentrated on what they would do when they reached Tamarang.
Kaelin, Zed told us we both had to stay away from Darkin Rahl, that we have no power against him, no defense.
She gave a short glance over her shoulder.
That's what he said.
Richard frowned.
Well, Shota said the queen wouldn't have the box for long.
Maybe when she said that, she meant we would get it soon.
No. It was a warning that the queen wouldn't have it long, meaning we must hurry. So what if Darkin Rahl is already there?
She looked over her shoulder, then slowed and walked next to him.
So what if he is? There is no other way. I'm going to Tamarang. Do you wish to wait behind for me?
Of course not. I'm only saying we should keep in mind what we are walking into, that Darkin Rahl might be there.
I have had that thought in my mind for a long time now.
He walked next to her for a minute without saying anything. At last he asked,
And what have you concluded? What will we do if he is there?
She stared straight ahead as she spoke. If Darkin Rahl is in Tamarang and we go there, then, in all likelihood, we will die. Richard lost a stride. She didn't wait for him, but walked on. As the woods grew darker, a few small clouds glowed red, the dying embers of day. The trail had begun following the Calasidran River, sometimes taking them close enough for a view of it, and even when it didn't, they could still hear the rush of its brown waters. Richard hadn't seen a wayward pine all afternoon. Glancing about at the treetops, he saw no sign of one now, either. As it grew dark, he gave up hope of finding one before nightfall, and so began looking for other shelter. Off the trail a safe distance, he found a short, cleft face of rock at the bottom of a rise. Trees were sheltering all about, and he felt it a well-hidden camp, even if it was open to the sky. The moon was well up by the time Kalin had a stew cooking on the fire, and by a bit of luck that surprised him, Richard had two rabbits in the snare before he expected to, and was able to add them to the pot.
"I think we have enough to feed Zed," she said.
As if bidden by her words, the old man, white hair in disarray, strode into the circle of light, stopping on the other side of the fire, hands on his hips, his robes looking a little tattered.
"I'm starved," he announced. "Let's eat."
Richard and Kalin both blinked, wide-eyed, and came to their feet. The old man blinked, too, when Richard drew the sword. In a heartbeat, Richard was over the fire, the sword's point to his ribs.
"What's this?"
the old man asked. "Back up," Richard ordered. They moved, the sword between them, to the trees. Richard eyed the trees carefully.
"Mind if I inquire as to what we're doing, my boy?"
"I've been called by you once and seen you once, yet neither was you. Third time tricked marks the fool," Richard quoted. He saw what he was looking for. "I'll not be tricked the third time. I'll not be the fool. Over there," he pointed with his chin, "walk between those two trees."
"I will not,"
the old man protested.
"Sheath your sword, my boy."
"If you don't walk between those two trees," Richard said through gritted teeth, "I'll sheath my sword in your ribs." The old man lifted his elbows in surprise, then picked up his robes as he stepped through the low brush, muttering to himself while Richard prodded him along with the sword. He took only a quick glance back before stepping between the trees. Richard watched as the spiderweb parted. A grin spread on his face.
"Zed, is it truly you?"
Zed, hands on his hips, peered at him with one eye.
"True as toasted toads, my boy."
Richard sheathed the sword and threw his arms around his old friend, nearly squeezing the life out of him.
"Oh, Zed, I'm so glad to see you."
Zed's arms flailed as he tried to get a breath. Richard let up, looked him in the eye, beaming, then squeezed again.
"I fear what would have happened had you been any more glad to see me."
Richard walked him back to the fire, an arm around his shoulders.
"Sorry about that, but I had to know for sure. I can't believe you're here. I'm so glad to see you. I'm so happy you're all right. We have so much to talk about."
"Yes, yes. Can we eat now?"
Kalin came and gave him a hug, too.
"We were so worried about you."
Zed longingly eyed the cooking pot over her shoulder as he hugged her back.
"Yes, yes, but this would all go better on a full stomach."
"But it isn't done yet," she smiled.
Zed gave her a look of disappointment.
"Not done? Are you sure? Perhaps we could check."
"Quite sure. We've only just started it."
"Not done?"
he said to himself, holding an elbow with one hand, rubbing his chin with the other.
"Well, we'll just see about that. Stand back, the both of you."
The wizard pushed the sleeves of his robes up his arms while he eyed the fire as if it were a child who had misbehaved. His skinny arms stretched out, fingers extended. Blue light sizzled around his bony hands, seeming to gather momentum. With a hiss, it shot out in a jagged blue streak, striking the cooking pot, making it jump. The blue fire cradled the pot, twisting around it, caressing it, stroking it. The stew bubbled with blue light, churned and sloshed. The wizard pulled his hands back, and the blue fire sizzled out. Zed smiled in satisfaction.
There, now it's done. Let's eat.
Kalin kneeled, tasting the stew with a wooden spoon.
He's right. It is done.
Well, don't just stand there staring, my boy. Get some plates.
Richard shook his head and did as he was told. Kalin dished up a plateful, putting some dried biscuits on the side, and Richard handed it to Zed. The old man didn't sit, but stood next to them by the fire, shoveling in the stew by the forkful. Kalin spooned stew on the other two plates, and by the time she was done, Zed was handing her his empty plate to be refilled. Having finished one helping, Zed was able to spare himself the time to sit. Richard sat on a small outcropping of ledge. Kalin sat next to him, folding her legs under her. Zed sat on the ground, facing them. Richard waited until Zed had swallowed down half the stew on his plate and finally allowed himself a pause before asking,
"So, how did you get along with Addie? Did she take good care of you?"
Zed looked up at him, blinking. Even in the firelight, Richard could have sworn Zed's face reddened.
"Addie? Well, we..."
He looked to Kalin's puzzled face.
"Well, we got along fine."
He scowled at Richard.
"What kind of question is that to ask?"
Richard and Kalin glanced at each other.
"I didn't mean anything by it," he said. "It's just that I couldn't help noticing that Addie is a handsome woman and interesting. I just meant I thought you would find her interesting."
Richard smiled a small smile to himself. Zed put his face back to his plate.
"She's a fine woman."
He rolled something around his plate with the end of his fork.
"What is this? I've eaten three and I still don't know what it is."
"Tava root,"
Kalin said. "Don't you like it?" Zed grunted.
"Didn't say I didn't like it. Just wanted to know what it was, that's all."
He looked up from his plate.
"Addie told me she gave you a nightstone. That's how I found you, by the nightstone."
He shook his fork at Richard.
"I hope you are being careful with that thing. Don't take it out unless there is great need. Exceptionally great need. Nightstones are extremely dangerous. Addie should have warned you, and I told her so."
He stabbed a tava root with his fork.
"It would be best to be rid of it."
Richard pushed at a piece of meat.
"We know."
Richard's mind was awash with questions he wanted to ask. He didn't know where to start. Zed beat him to it, asking first.
"Have you two been doing as I said? Have you been staying out of trouble? What have you been doing?"
"Well," Richard said, taking a deep breath, "we spent a good deal of time with the mud people."
"The mud people?"
Zed mulled this over.
"Good,"
he proclaimed at last, holding a forkful of meat in the air.
"You can't get in much trouble with the mud people."
He took the meat off the fork with his teeth and dipped it back in his plate for more stew and a bit of dried biscuit. He spoke and chewed at the same time.
"So, you two had a nice stay with the mud people."
He noticed that they weren't saying anything, and his eyes went from one to the other.
"You can't get in much trouble with the mud people."
It sounded like an order. Richard glanced over at Kalin. She dipped her biscuit in the stew. "I killed one of the elders," she said, putting the biscuit in her mouth without looking up. Zed dropped his fork, then caught it in midair just before it hit the ground.
"What?"
"It was self-defense," Richard protested to her. "He was trying to kill you."
"What?"
Zed stood with his plate, then sat back down.
"Bags! Why would an elder dare to try to kill a..."
He snapped his mouth shut with a glance to Richard.
"Confessor,"
Richard finished for him. His mood withered. Zed looked from one bowed head to the other.
"So, you finally told him?"
Kalin nodded. "A few days ago."
"Just a few days ago."
Zed grunted an acknowledgement, then ate more stew in silence, eyeing them suspiciously from time to time.
"Why would an elder dare to try to kill a confessor?"
"Well," Richard said, "that was when we found out what a nightstone could do.
just before they named us as Mud People.
They named you Mud People? Why?
Zed's eyes widened.
You took a wife.
Well, no. Richard pulled the leather thong out of his shirt and showed Zed the Birdman's whistle. They settled for giving me this. Zed gave a cursory glance to the whistle.
Why would they agree to you not... And why would they name you Mud People?
Because we asked them. We had to. It was the only way to get them to call a gathering for us.
What? They called a gathering for you?
Yes. That was just before Dark and Rawl came.
What?
Zed yelled again, jumping to his feet.
Dark and Rawl was there! I told you, stay away from him!
Richard looked up. We didn't exactly invite him.
He killed a lot of them, Kaelin said in a quiet voice, still looking down at her plate, chewing slowly.
Zed stared at the top of her head, then slowly sank back down.
I'm sorry, he said softly. So, what did the ancestors' spirits tell you?
Richard gave a shrug. That we had to go see a witch woman.
Witch woman?
Zed's eyes narrowed.
What witch woman? Where?
Shota, in Agaden Reach. Zed winced, almost dropping his plate, the air making a sound going through his bared, gritted teeth as he drew a sharp breath.
Shota!
He looked around as if someone might hear. He lowered his voice, directing a harsh whisper to Kaelin as he leaned closer to her.
Bax, what could possess you to guide him into Agaden Reach? You are sworn to protect him.
Believe me, she said, looking him in the eye, I did not want to do it. We had to, Richard said, coming to her defense. Zed cast an eye to him.
Why?
To find out where the box is. And we did, too, Shota told us.
Shota told you,
said Mark, scowling at him.
And what else did she tell you? Shota tells you nothing you want to know without telling you something you don't.
Kaelin gave Richard a sidelong glance. He didn't return it. Nothing. She told us nothing else. He held Zed's eyes without backing down. She told us that Queen Milena in Tamarang has the last box of Orden. She told us because her life, too, depends on this. Richard held Zed's glare. He doubted that his old friend believed him, but he didn't want to tell him what Shota had said. How could he tell Zed that one or two of them might end up being traitors? That Zed would use wizard's fire against him, that Kaelin would touch him with her power? He feared that maybe it would be justified. After all, he was the one who knew about the book. They didn't. Zed, he said softly, you told me you wanted me to get us to the Midlands, and that you had a plan once we were here. You were struck down by that underworld beast. You were unconscious. We didn't know when or if you would wake. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what your plan was. Winter is coming. We have to stop Dark and Rawl. His voice turned harder as he went on. I have been doing the best I could without you. I've lost track of the number of times we have nearly been killed. All I knew to do was to try to find the box. Kaelin helped me, and we found out where it is. It has cost us both dearly. If you don't like what I have done, then take your cursed sword of truth back. I am near to being fed up with it, with everything. He threw his plate on the ground, walking off a ways into the dark, standing with his back to them, a lump growing in his throat. The dark trees in front of him became watery. It surprised him the way the anger had reached up and taken him. He had wanted to see Zed so badly, and now that he was here, he was angry with him. He let the ire rage, waiting for it to die of its own accord. Zed and Kaelin exchanged a look.
Yes, he said softly to her. I can see that you have indeed told him.
He set his plate on the ground, stood, and gave her a pat on the shoulder.
I'm sorry, dear one.
Richard didn't move when he felt Zed's hand on his shoulder.
I'm sorry, my boy. I guess you have been having a hard time of it.
Richard nodded as he stared into the darkness.
I killed a man with the sword.
With the magic. Zed waited a short while before he spoke.
Well,
I know you. I'm sure you had to.
No, Richard said in a painful whisper. I didn't have to. I thought I was protecting Kaylin, protecting her life. I didn't know she was a confessor, that she needed no protection. But I surely wanted to, and I surely enjoyed it.
You only thought you did. That was the magic.
I'm not so sure. I'm not sure what is becoming of me.
Richard, forgive me for sounding as if I were angry with you. It is myself I'm angry with. You have done well. It is I who have failed.
What do you mean? Zed patted his shoulder.
Come and sit. I will tell you both what has happened.
They walked back to the fire, Kaylin watching them together, looking lonely. Richard sat next to her again and gave her a small smile, which she returned. Zed picked up his plate, gave it a hard look, and set it back down.
I'm afraid we're in a lot of trouble, he said in a soft voice.
A sarcastic remark immediately sprang to Richard's mind, but he stifled it and asked instead, Why? What's happened? What of your plan?
My plan?
Zed gave a wry smile, drew his knees up, and pulled his robes over his legs, making a little tent over them.
My plan was to stop Rawl without having to deal with him, and without you two having to get in danger's way. My plan was for you two to stay out of trouble while I dealt with this. It would seem as if your own plans may be our only way now. I have not told you all there is to know of the Boxes of Orden, because it was not for you to know. It was none of your business. It was only for me to know.
He looked at each of them, anger flashing in his eyes for an instant before it faded.
But I guess it doesn't matter now.
What was not for us to know? Kaylin asked with a frown, her own anger flashing a little.
Apparently, she didn't like it any more than Richard did, that they were in danger without knowing it all.
Well, you see, Zed said, the three boxes work just as I said, each with their own purpose, but you have to know which to open. That is the part I know. It's all in a book called The Book of Counted Shadows. The Book of Counted Shadows is an instruction book for the boxes. I'm its keeper.
Richard went rigid. The tooth felt as if it would jump right off his chest. He couldn't move a muscle, could hardly breathe.
You know which box is which? Kaylin asked.
You know which he must open?
No. I'm the keeper of the book. That information is all in the book. But I've never read it. I don't know which box is which or even how to figure it out. If I were to open the book, it would risk spreading the knowledge. It must not be opened. That could be very dangerous. So I never did. I am the keeper of many books, this only one among them, but a very important one.
Richard realized that his eyes were open wide and tried to relax them back to normal with a few blinks. Almost his whole life he had been looking forward to the day he would find the keeper of the book, and it had been Zed the whole time. The shock left him frozen.
Where was it? Kaylin asked. What happened?
It was in my keep, the wizard's keep, in Adendrill.
You went to Adendrill? Kaylin asked, her voice anxious.
How is Adendrill? Is it safe?
Zed averted his eyes.
Adendrill has fallen.
Kaylin's hand went to her mouth. Tears filled her eyes.
No.
Zed nodded.
I'm afraid so.
He picked at his robes.
It is not going well for them. At least I gave the occupiers something to think about, he added under his breath.
Captain Rifkin? Lieutenants Dellis and Miller? The Home Guard?
Zed kept his eyes to the ground and shook his head as she named each in turn. Kaylin put her hands to her breast as she took deep breaths and bit her lip. Whoever these men were, She looked to be pretty upset by the news. Richard thought he should cover his own shock by saying something.
What's this wizard's keep? It's a refuge. A place where the wizards preserve important things of magic, such as the books of prophecies, and books of even more importance, books of magic and instruction, such as the Book of Counted Shadows. Some of the books are used to teach new wizards, some are used as reference, and some are used as weapons. Other items of magic are kept there also, such as the Sword of Truth between seekers. The keep is sealed by magic. None can enter but a wizard. At least, none but a wizard was supposed to be able to enter. But someone did. How they did without being killed is beyond me. It must have been Darkin Rawl. He must have the book.
Maybe it wasn't Darkin Rawl, Richard managed, his back straight as a board. Zed's eyes narrowed.
If it wasn't Darkin Rawl, then it was a thief. A very clever thief, but a thief nonetheless.
Richard swallowed back the dryness in his mouth.
Zed, do you think this book, the Book of Counted Shadows, would be able to tell us how to stop Rawl? How to keep him from using the boxes?
Zed shrugged his bony shoulders.
As I said, I've never opened the cover. But from what I know from other books of instruction, it would only be of aid to the person with the boxes. It's designed to help use magic, not to help another in stopping its use. In all likelihood, it wouldn't have helped us. My plan was to simply get the book and destroy it, to keep Rawl from getting the information. Having the book lost to us leaves us with no alternative. We must find the last box.
But without the book, can Rawl still open the boxes? Kaelin asked.
With as much as he knows, I'm sure he can. But he still wouldn't know which one.
Then, with or without the book, he's going to open a box, Richard said. He has to. If he doesn't, he dies. He has nothing to lose. Even if you had recovered the book, he would still open a box. After all, there is a chance he will pick right.
Well, if he has the book, then he will know which to open. I was hoping that if we couldn't find the last box, at least I could destroy the book and keep it from Rawl. Give us at least that one chance, the chance he might pick right for us.
Zed's face soured.
I would give anything to destroy that book.
Kaelin put her hand on Richard's arm. He almost jumped. Then Richard has done as the Seeker should. He has found where the box is. Queen Malena has it. She gave Richard a smile of reassurance. The Seeker has done his job well. His mind was spinning too fast to return the smile properly. Zed drew a finger and thumb down opposite sides of his chin.
And how do you propose we get it from her? Knowing is one thing, getting is quite another.
Kaelin gave Zed a smooth smile. Queen Malena is the one to whom the snake in the silver robe sold his services. He is about to have an unpleasant meeting with the Mother Confessor.
Gilla? Queen Malena is the one Gilla went to?
The wrinkles on Zed's face deepened with his scowl.
I think he will be astonished to meet my eyes again.
She frowned. You just leave this task to me. He is my wizard. I will deal with him. Richard's eyes went back and forth between the two of them. He felt suddenly out of place. The great wizard and the Mother Confessor discussing how they would deal with an upstart wizard as if they were talking of pulling weeds in a garden. He thought of his father, of how his father had told him he had taken the book to prevent it from falling into covetous hands, Darkin Rawl's hands. He spoke without thinking. Maybe he had a good reason for doing what he did. They both turned and looked at him as if they had forgotten he was there.
A good reason? Kaelin snapped. Greed was his good reason. He deserted me and left me to the quads.
Sometimes people do things for reasons that aren't what they seem.
Richard gave her an even look.
Maybe he thought the box was more important.
Kaelin looked too surprised to speak.
Zed frowned, his white hair looking wild in the firelight.
Perhaps you are right. It could be that Giller knew about the Queen having the box and wanted to protect it. He certainly knew what the boxes were about.
He gave Richard an ironic smile.
Maybe the Seeker has given us a new perspective. Maybe we have an ally in Tamarang.
And maybe not, Kaelin said.
We will know soon enough,
the wizard sighed. Zed, Richard asked. Yesterday, we went to a place called Horner's Mill. Zed nodded.
I saw it, and I have seen many more just like it.
Richard leaned forward. It wasn't Westlanders, was it? It couldn't have been Westlanders. I told Michael to get the army together and protect Westland. I didn't tell him to attack anyone. Certainly not helpless people. It couldn't have been Westlanders. They wouldn't do that.
No, it wasn't anyone from Westland. I haven't seen or heard from Michael.
Then who?
It was Rawl's own men who did it, by his command.
That does not make any sense, Kaelin said. The town was loyal to Dahara. There were forces of the People's Peace Army there, and they were killed to a man.
That's the very reason he did it.
They both gave him puzzled looks. That doesn't make any sense, Kaelin said.
Wizard's first rule.
Richard frowned. What?
Wizard's first rule.
People are stupid.
Richard and Kaelin frowned even more.
People are stupid. Given proper motivation, almost anyone will believe almost anything. Because people are stupid, they will believe a lie because they want to believe it's true, or because they are afraid it might be true. People's heads are full of knowledge, facts, and beliefs, and most of it is false. Yet they think it all true. People are stupid. They can only rarely tell the difference between a lie and the truth, and yet they are confident they can, and so are all the easier to fool. Because of the wizard's first rule, the old wizards created confessors and seekers as a means of helping find the truth when the truth is important enough. Rawl knows the wizard's rules. He is using the first one. People need an enemy to feel a sense of purpose. It's easy to lead people when they have a sense of purpose. Sense of purpose is more important by far than the truth. In fact, truth has no bearing in this. Darkenrahl is providing them with an enemy, other than himself, a sense of purpose. People are stupid. They want to believe, so they do.
But they were his own people, Kaelin protested. He was killing his supporters.
You will notice not all the people were killed. Some were raped, tortured, but left alive to flee, to spread the news. You will also note how none of the soldiers were left alive to dispute the story. That it isn't the truth doesn't matter, and the ones hearing the story will believe it because it provides them with a sense of purpose, an enemy to rally against. The survivors will spread the word like a wildfire. Even though Rawl has destroyed a few towns that were loyal to him and a few of his soldiers, he has gained many more towns to his side 100-fold over. Even more people will rally around him and support him because he has told them he wants to protect them from this enemy. Truth is hard to sell. It gives no sense of purpose. It is simply truth.
Richard sat back, a little stunned.
But it isn't true. How can Rawl get away with it? How could everyone believe it?
Zed gave him a stern look.
You knew better. You knew it wasn't Westlanders, yet even you doubted your knowledge. You were afraid it was true. Being afraid something is true is accepting the possibility. Accepting the possibility is the first step to believing. At least, you are smart enough to question. Think of how easy it is to believe for people who don't question, who don't even know how to question. For most people, it's not the truth that is important, it's the cause. Rawl is intelligent. He has given them a cause.